many ways, this is, I recall the line about the J.R.R. Tolkien.
Like in a movie, it was like set up.
Well, I've got a piece of email here from our listener, Marty, who says, you know, there's some good to be taken out of this because we know that it will be rebuilt at warp speed.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush this morning is expected to publicly address the crisis for homeowners trying to avoid defaulting on their subprime loans. During a press conference, the president will also introduce reforms to the system. An Australian newspaper quotes U.S. General David Petraeus saying the troop surge in Iraq is working. The general says the U.S. strategy is reducing violence and al-Qaeda's influence in the region. Iraqi officials today announced about 1,500 prisoners will be released from the country's jails during the holy month of Ramadan. Goodwill gestures are traditional at that time. Ramadan begins in mid-September. In Camp Pendleton, a military court heard testimony from a Marine who said his sergeant ordered him to execute a room full of crying Iraqi women and children during the Haditha massacre 2 years ago. The court is determining whether the sergeant should face a court-martial for his role in the incident. The New York Times says government court documents allege American-owned Lee Dynamics is suspected of bribing officials to win more than $11 million in contracts to build warehouses in Iraq. The U.S. Army last month suspended business with the firm. 100 or so Pakistani soldiers Islamic militants claimed to have kidnapped yesterday have been found safe. Authorities say the men were escorting a food convoy when bad weather forced them to seek refuge with villagers in an isolated region in southern Afghanistan. In Des Moines, a county judge has ruled unconstitutional Iowa's 10-year-old ban on gay marriage. Within hours of the decision, gay couples began filing for marriage licenses. In California, lawmakers have approved a bill making it illegal for employers to require workers to implant identification devices under their skin. The devices are similar to the microchips used to ID pets. Legislators say forcing the implants on employees is a violation of privacy. In Peru, relief agencies say 200,000 survivors of this month's massive earthquake are desperately in need of blankets, water, and medical supplies. The National Hurricane Center says Tropical Storm Henriette has formed off the Pacific coast of Mexico with storm warnings posted between Acapulco and Manzanilla. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
In Philadelphia and Los Angeles yesterday, the EPA held its first hearings on new smog standards. Hundreds of anti-pollution advocates and patients with respiratory diseases testified for stricter air quality regulations. The U.S. Coast Guard and Puerto Rican authorities are investigating a 3-mile bunker oil spill endangering Puerto Rico's threatened coral reefs. Bunker oil is used in older ships. Ceremonies are taking place throughout the U.K. today, commemorating the 10th anniversary of Princess Diana's death in a Parisian car accident. A federal judge yesterday received documents from several states, led by California, asking for continued court oversight of Microsoft. The states asked for more time to examine the antitrust implications of Microsoft's new Windows Vista system. Dell Computers posted a 46% surge in quarterly earnings. The computer maker credited stronger commercial sales and lower costs. Consumer spending rose in July by twice as much as it did in June. Analysts cited an increase in income. The U.S. economy grew at a 4% rate in the latest quarter, exceeding initial government forecasts. Light sweet crude trading at $74.18 a barrel. Wall Street, Dow is up 112 points, NASDAQ up 25, S&P 500 up 15. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
Live from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right, everybody, time to get the hell up, time to move it, get up, get out of bed, move it, wake up and see what's happening to your country, wake up and see what's happening to your world, wake up and see what's happening to your life, get up, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the numbers to call in. If you want to call in today and talk to me, you can talk to me about anything. I've got some specific things to talk about, but I've got an open mic policy. If you want to call in, the numbers are 304-658-5453 or the toll-free number 877-443-2366. You can also join us in the Head-On Radio Network chat room where you can speak to some very lovely and wonderful people, including our good friend Bob Kincaid, Ray Hinckley, ELO, and No Nanette. I love the name Nanette. Nanette is a very nice person, but every time I hear her name, I keep thinking of the play. No Nanette! And actually, that play is the cause of the infamous Red Sox curse. Curse of the Bambino, because the guy who owned the Red Sox at the time sold Babe Ruth and many other players to the Yankees in order to fund his plays, among which was No Nanette, which was a big hit. So he got some money out of it, but he destroyed the Red Sox baseball team for many years. But that has nothing to do with anything that I want to talk about. It's just one of those useless pieces of information. If you want to get in the Head-On Radio Network chat room, you can go to headonradionetwork.com and just click on the live chat link, and then you can, like I say, talk to some of the smartest people on the Internet. How is everybody doing today? It is Friday. Oh, of course, and there's Suzanne. I'm sorry, Suzanne. I was doing it on the fly, and I didn't see it. I'm sorry. it is Friday, and we may or may not hear from our good friend Carol Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. It's my fault. I did not email her last night to see if she could be on the show. I try to get her on every Friday. But, you know, things happen, and it's been a little bit more of a hectic time for me personally in the last few days because I've been spending a lot of time looking for work. For those of you who've looked for work before, and there's a lot of you out there, I'm sure, you know what a time-consuming project it is. And it is the most difficult job you'll ever have because it's basically like selling yourself. And for those of you who know me and know me personally, you know my personality, you understand that selling myself is not the thing that I do best. I'm good at the radio show. I'm good at doing certain things, and I do have talent and skills in a lot of different areas, but I just have trouble explaining that to people who pay me money to do those things. So I'm always caught in that predicament. But my job is my day job is basically winding down. And perfectly honest, look, it was a nice enough job while it lasted. But the problem is that it just didn't do enough as far as money is concerned. Sorry about that. It didn't do. It was $9.63 an hour, and that really didn't cover my rent and bills, basically. So, you know, if I'm gonna be not doing that, I might as well be spending my time more constructively. No, Ray Hinckley in the chat room is asking if that was Carol K. call. No, she would not be calling in on my phone. That's a personal call. She would be calling in at the Head On Studios, Ray. You should know that by now. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be doing that. No, I don't take... When you call into the show, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who aren't familiar with how this process works, you're not calling my house, you're calling the studios in West Virginia, which is being handled by our good friend Bob Kincaid, who has, in my opinion, one of the best, if not the best, shows on the Head On Network, and because he's the founder. I'm not just saying that because he's my boss, but I really love his show. I love listening to his show. I love all of our shows here on the Head On Network. But no, I'm busy pounding the pavement, and I'm looking for work, and then mostly I'm trying to find some IT desktop support job. Work. My friend Phyllis Euster, who was on the show from time to time, and who, if she wasn't so crazy busy on her own, would like to be on the show a little more often talking about election reform issues, and I'm going to be talking about that later today. You know, she's always like, Joe, you know, you can do this stuff, you can do anything and all that, but then I'm like, I get so negative, and I hate it when I get negative about myself, but that's just the way I am sometimes. And I'm not necessarily trying to knock myself down. It's just that I've suffered so many disappointments over the years, I just kind of look for that. Just like, you know, I kind of do, you know, when people talk about funding for the Head On Network, I'm just like, well, when it happens, it happens. You know? When it happens, it happens. And we hope it happens someday soon. And maybe we'll go out and maybe I'll start being an enforcer for a loan shark. Break a few kneecaps, get a few thousand bucks handy, and then that'll be just fine. And you know what's really sad is, and again, I point at just me, but it's not just me. The amount of money it would take to get me out of this hole is nothing. You know, a large chunk of it is the fact that I lost about a year. Because of my wife's illness, I was a year unemployed, and I got absolutely nothing back from that. There was no compensation. So I lost about $25,000. And basically, if someone were to hand me $20,000, between $20,000 and $25,000, and say, here you go, that would solve all of my problems. I can pay off all of my rent and all of my bills, get back on my feet, you know, and have a much more comfortable existence and a much more stress-free existence. But, of course, that money's not coming. Nobody has that kind of money to give me. Nobody I know has that kind of money to give me. But $20,000 is nothing. It's nothing. It's chicken feed. We're wasting billions of dollars a day in Iraq. There are people who make $20,000 a minute in this country. And $20,000 is nothing. But it just goes to show where we are in this country, where that amount of money would mean so much. It would, for a lot of people, $20,000 would make a huge difference in their lives. And, you know, people go out and they play the lottery and they want to hit the lottery because they want to have some more control over their lives. And this is the problem when you're poor. And when you're poor, you don't have any control over your life. And that's the situation I'm in today. And it's one of the reasons why I do this radio show, and I'm going to be talking about that also today, along with the election reform issue. There's a couple issues I want to talk about, and we're coming up on a break, not quite this moment, but after the break, I'm going to start talking about an interview I saw with Bill Moyers, with Michael J. Copps, with two P's, who was one of the chairmen of the commissioners on the Federal Communications Commission. One of the guys who's trying to protect us and save the public airwaves against overwhelming opposition, and about media consolidation and all that stuff. And it was a very, very powerful interview. And I'm also going to talk about election reform, and I'm also going to talk about our moving slowly but surely into war with Iran. There are several sources talking about that. So we've got a bunch to talk about today. But again, I've got an open mic policy. If you want any, if there's anything else you want to talk about, you can feel free to call in. And let's go ahead and take that break. If you do want to call in, numbers are 304-658-5453, 877-443-2366. Let's take our first break, and we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Are you fed up with the Democrats and Republicans? Tired of the catfighting between the left and the right? You'll want to listen to America Back on Track. America Back on Track from the Quality News Network is a true alternative, a new national radio voice for people who put America before a political party and special money interests. America Back on Track is for people who want to restore the values that made our country great: quality, integrity, purpose, compassion, humility, and strength. America Back on Track delivers the news and perspective, engaging listeners with intelligent interviews and stimulating commentary. Wouldn't you rather hear smart people talking about new directions instead of ideologues pushing their propaganda? Tune in to America Back on Track weekdays at noon Pacific right here or online at thequalitynewsnetwork.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty. And you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. Heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.ORG.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
And we're back here on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. And, got a lot to talk about. One of my favorite websites to get information from is the Sideshow, Avedon Carroll's Sideshow. Like some blogs, I tend to categorize blogs, and there are blogs that I call information warehouses. Atrios is probably the most well-known. And what Atrios does and what Avedon Carroll of the Sideshow does are basically they'll do a little editorializing from time to time, but mostly what they do is they pick a link and they say, here you go, read this. Take a look at this. This is interesting bit of news. But Avedon Carroll pointed me to an interview by Bill Moyers with Michael J. Copps of the FCC. And he was talking about the issue of media consolidation. And it was some very, very powerful stuff and very, very scary stuff, to be perfectly honest. And it's stuff we've all known. You know. And as I've said time and time again on this show, And I tend to repeat myself a lot because there are certain things that need to be repeated. But if you want to know why the country's tarted, if you want to know why things are happening in this country, a big reason for it is the massive propaganda that goes on the right on a constant daily basis. And the reason for that is because pretty much every newspaper, radio station, television network, cable television network is owned by a grand total of about 5 corporations. And the heads of these corporations, their boards, are all strong conservative Republican supporters and will do everything they can to support policies and issues that are to their benefit and do not serve the public interest. And it is a very, very dangerous situation when you have such powerful communication. And look, most people get their news nowadays from television. And again, it's something that I've repeated before. For people who got their news 40, 50 years ago, back in the 40s, back in the 50s, when they got their news, for the most part, they got it from newspapers in the days before radio and television. I mean, people listened to radio, of course, but for the most part, when they got their news in depth, certainly, they got it from newspapers. And the beat reporters who were writing those columns, for the most part, made pretty much the same kind of money everybody else made. I mean, some of them got, there were obviously some star columnists back then, people who made a lot of money and people who, but even then, they weren't making that much more than the average person was making at the time. Because it was much more of a common man attitude that everybody, you know, the wealth distribution was much, you know, squeezed together in the middle as opposed to being forced all the way up to the top, right? But nowadays, people mostly get their news from television and from radio to a certain extent, but mostly television, and the people who go on television, the people who do the news on television, make gobs more money than the average person makes. Most the anchor people, the people you see on TV, they make in the six figures at the very least. A lot of them make a lot more. And of course, you know, the network anchors make seven figures and higher, and then the punditry make seven figures or higher. And they really have very little connection, despite what they like. You know, Chris Matthews and these guys, they all try to say, well, you know, I was born a regular common man. Bull. They were not. They were never that. They came from well-off families that gave them good opportunities and good educations and gave them the ability. And they have completely and totally lost touch. David Broder is the one that most people talk about, the dean of the Washington Press Corps, who's never been anything more than a Republican hack. But he gains respect, you know, and they honestly believe that this guy is a man of the common people. And I'm like, what are you, nuts? What are you kidding me? What the hell does he understand about any issues that we have to go through every single day? What does he understand about sleeping on an air mattress because you can't afford any furniture? What does he know about that? He hasn't known anything about anything like that since maybe he was, you know, a teenager just starting out. But the media consolidation is, and again, my big pet issue, and everybody has a pet issue, especially on the left. We're all caught up with our little pet issues, and some of them are very important. But I deal with it in very practical terms. So my pet issue is election reform, because I very firmly believe that a lot of the things that we need to accomplish simply can't get accomplished if we don't have the right people in office, and we can't get the right people in office if the elections are constantly rigged. But Michael J. Copps makes a very, very powerful point when he says, whatever your issue is, if your big issue is election reform or Hurricane Katrina or anything like that, your second big issue ought to be media consolidation. Because all of these, I'm going to quote him for a second, all of these big issues get filtered and funneled through big media. That's how the people hear about it. That's what sets the parameters of the debate, and that's what maybe limits intelligent decision-making for the future of our democracy, end quote. That is a very, very powerful statement. Trust the people, one politician said. Trust the people and you know, let them make the decision. But the people can't be trusted to make the decision if they're given wrong information. And that's a serious problem. If we want to be good citizens, and being a good citizen is a very, very difficult thing. It is much easier to be a peasant than it is to be a citizen, because a peasant recognizes that they have no control over what goes on in the imperial circles, whoever's ruling their lives, and they just go on with their regular lives, and you know, their day-to-day lives are based upon, you know, the goodwill of the people who are in charge. And they understand that, and they recognize that. But as a citizen, you have to be more informed, and you have to be more active. You have to. It's a participatory type of deal. I'll say the word right. It's a participatory type of deal, and it takes a lot more work. It takes intelligence. It takes education. It takes building a society where people have that education and have that knowledge so that they can make the right decisions. And if they're being lied to on a constant level, they can't make intelligent decisions. They can't make rational decisions. And every day, every single day of the year, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all the ships at sea, every single day of the year, you have been hammered by corporate propaganda, which is all this is. And you know, it's not a national thing. I've talked about this before. It's not so much that, you know, it's pro-American, because it's not pro-American. It has nothing to do with that. It's a political hegemony, but it's a political hegemony that's not built on ideological basis. It's not really about anything more than how much money can we grab from as many people as we can, and how much can we get away with. It's a corporate assault on all nations, on the entire human race. It's a belief that the corporation is a more important entity than the individual, and that their interests are the public interest, which is not the case. What's good for General Motors is not necessarily good for the country. It's a part of that, and obviously people need to be employed and have jobs, and it's very good for, you know, very good along those lines, but the truth of the matter is what's good for the American public should be determined by the American public, and the American public can't make those decisions properly without the right information. And I'm going to paraphrase Jefferson. Jefferson said something to the effect of, if we had a choice between living in a country with either a free government or a free press, he would choose the free press any day, because the free press is what allows people to make these decisions. But it used to be, and one of the things that Michael Jacobs talked about is said that we used to, every 3 years, require a company to come down, any radio station, television station, they had to come down and they had to get their license renewed. And there was a checklist of things, a group of things that they looked at to determine whether or not they were acting in the public interest. And if they felt they were acting in the public interest, which they usually were, they would say, okay, you can get your license back. And there were, and I'm sure, and I don't know any specific instances, I'm sure there were some interests to say, you guys are not doing the public interest. And the public interest in the FCC rules and regulations and all that stuff is mentioned something like 11 times, or like in the Constitution or someplace like that. The 1934 laws, that's it. The 1934 laws that governed the use of airwaves when radio was just coming out, when, you know, before television, they used the term public interest a lot. And while that can be a fairly vague thing, but there's a general understanding that it has to do with diversity, it has to do with localization. And you don't have that when everything is owned by basically five corporations. And what's important to understand about all of this is that there's information that's out there that you can never get because of this. But nowadays, to continue on with what I was saying, but nowadays, instead of every 3 years and having to go down there and justify yourself, it's every 8 years, and basically you can send a postcard in and they'll send your license back in the mail. There's no incentive. There's no punishment for somebody who's not working in the public interest. And the corporate interest is not, like I said, necessarily the public interest. They're two different things. The free market it can be a great and wonderful thing, but the open hand of Adam Smith can very quickly turn into a closed fist that smashes anything in sight. The ideology they like to sell is that if you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. The reality of unbridled capitalism is if you try to build a better mousetrap, the Acme Mousetrap Company will smash you down so fast and so hard you won't know what hits you. That is the practical reality of it. And the only protection you have against that is to have a free government that not only makes the laws but enforces them and prevents the Acme Mousetrap Company from smashing down all opposition just so that it can maintain its profitability margin. And of course, you know, and the movie Network by Paddy Chayefsky, which is one of the most prescient movies ever made. Shows very clearly, you know, how things work. I mean, I realize it's a fictional story, but my God, you know, the some of the things that he had in there, you know, and mostly about the news divisions of big networks, which are one of the things that they do that's supposed to be in the public interest and which used to be a lot more independent than they are now, suddenly they're supposed to be profit-making machines. And that's how you get Katie Couric, who is, I'm sure, a very nice person and who does a wonderful job as kind of a nice talk show host lady for the Today Show, or one of those kind of soft fare like that. That's how you get Katie Couric as the anchor of a news show, of the network news. Every time I hear about her, I keep thinking of the old Bloom County cartoon where they get like Christine Brinkley or something like that to be head on. And Christine Brinkley is going to tell us about that big massive fire in which hundreds of people died. Hi! Oh, gross! You know, that's what I keep thinking. Hey, we got the WINS news coming up, the Workers Independent News. Let's go ahead and do that. I'm going to talk about more on this issue and about the oncoming war with Iran. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Hey, it's a Puffy AmiYumi break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. With just 2 weeks left in California's legislative session, leaders in both houses are working on a health care reform bill that would require employers to provide health insurance. The California Labor Federation's Art Pulaski.
Employers would pay 7.5% of payroll up to the maximum of Social Security taxable income, which is, what, about $96,000. And then employers would either have to provide coverage for their employees or put that money, equivalent amount of money, into a pot, whereby the state would have a large risk pool available for people who are not provided insurance directly by their employers.
Pulaski says a single-payer universal health care bill did not advance in the California legislature, but there's a real chance that this one will.
The discussions are becoming intense between the leadership and the governor in terms of how we negotiate this bill out, and so I expect that we're going to see some more significant progress over the next week.
New York City's sea of yellow cabs could come to a halt next week. Jesse Russell reports.
The 48-hour strike will happen on September 5th and 6th if the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission move forward with plans to install GPS tracking technology in all taxis. More than 10,000 cabbies make up the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, who announced the plans to move forward with the strike on August 23rd. During that press conference, Alliance spokesperson Bill Lindauer said taxi drivers are upset they have to pay for the GPS, which will track their every movement. As independent contractors, the taxi drivers consider it a violation of their privacy.
200 employees for Australian auto parts maker Venture returned to work on Wednesday, giving relief to Ford Motor Company, who had to stand down 1,800 workers without pay as that strike continued. Venture is moving the jobs from Melbourne and, according to union representatives, has reneged on an agreement to pay more than $25 million in entitlements. The employees returned to work after they lost legal protections. Ford had been asking the Australian government to become involved in the Venture dispute so Ford workers could return to the production lines. Venture has been given 1 week to settle the dispute. In a major blow to former Senator John Edwards, the International Association of Machinists endorsed Senator Hillary Clinton for president on Thursday. Edwards had expected to pick up the labor endorsement from the 700,000-strong industrial trade union. According to IAM President Tom Buffenbarger, the union chose Clinton because she is the only candidate of either party, he says, to come forward with a comprehensive manufacturing policy. The machinists also endorsed Republican candidate, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K, and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
To the Head On Radio Network.
And we're back here in the Cup Joe radio show, last half hour of the show. Man, the time flies when I do this show sometimes. Night Sounds, by the way, is a great show. I really, really love Billy Shears, and I love that wonderful, wonderful English accent from her. She is really, really beautiful. Billy Shears, that's not Billy Shears, obviously. But, I'm really glad that we have him on the Head On Radio Network. He's been around for a long time, and he's really good. He's got a great voice, and he's got great taste in music. You know, and that's just the thing. You know, it's not just that talk radio is bad, and media consolidation makes talk radio bad and politicizes. But the fact of the matter is, it makes all radio bad. In the interview that I had. That I had mentioned with Bill Moyers, and just go to pbs.org and do a search for Bill Moyers, Michael J. Copps interview, and you can watch the whole interview. It's about 20 minutes long. It's very fascinating, very powerful stuff. And one of the problems is that they showed a clip in the interview of one of the town hall meetings that they had about this issue. And of course, one of the scary things was the fact that I don't know if it was that particular meeting, but there was a meeting that was being held, and they weren't expecting a lot of people to show up, and a lot of people showed up, and Michael J. Copps asked, "Where did you guys hear about this meeting?" Because it really wasn't, you know, very well publicized. And they said the BBC. So it just goes to show, you know, how bad things are that people are getting information about American FCC on the British Broadcasting Company, right? But the thing is, what I wanted to say, if I can get back on my train of thought, because I ramble like that, is that they asked the people at this town hall meeting, is radio better or worse than it was 10 years ago? And people just said, no, it's worse. It's worse. People know it's worse. And it's not just talk radio. Listen to any kind of radio station these days playing music. And I deal with this at work, okay? Now, top 40 radio has been the same. And I joke about it at work. Because when I was at my last job, where there was always listening to rap music, and not only were they always listening to rap music, they were listening to a top 40 rap, which is basically playing the same six rap songs. And I would get frustrated because it's very annoying to me to try to concentrate on my job when I'm hearing the same songs over and over again. I mean, I don't even like to listen to songs that I like over and over again, like that. But I would joke about it. You know, I'd make a joke. Rap song. You know, I'd just start singing. This is what I just said. This is what I just said. This is what I just said. I just said whoa, because you gotta have the whoa, and then all these damn songs have that now. But top 40 radio hasn't changed in 50 years. Okay, but even on the oldie stations, we had another person there listen to an oldie station, and that's fine, and that's all well and good. It's the music that I grew up with, so I like it. But the problem is, they still have a very limited playlist. And it used to be, years ago, that radio stations were much more independent. For those of you who are old enough to remember the television show WKRP in Cincinnati, which is one of the best TV shows there ever, ever was, it was about one of those old radio stations. And the station in the TV show, for those who have never seen the show, was a little station in Cincinnati, WKRP. and they're switched from the kind of Muzak station to a rock station. And the DJs had total control of what got played on the air, and the station manager supported that. Even though he tried to beg the guy to play some top 40, some of the guys to play some top 40 music, Johnny Fever, who was the their main DJ, their morning guy, the drive morning guy, which is the most important slot in radio, I believe, because that's what people listen to in their cars. You know, he said, Johnny, please play something in the top 40. And Johnny's like, no, I'm not playing. You know, and he would play, you know, Pink Floyd and you know, the great classic rock, what we call classic rock now. But the DJs had a lot more control over that. And those stations, you know, during the 70s and then during the 80s were slowly starting to go away. And it was all because that was when the media consolidation began under, of course, our good conservative friend Ronald Reagan, who, of course, made a lot of money off of it. He and his friends made a lot of money off, because that's, you know, that's really all they care about, you know. Human lives, human lives are cheap. Money, that's the important thing, right? And leading up to what I want to talk about next, because this is also very important, and it's about why we have a government that's not accountable. There are several sources, there are several websites in the last couple of days talking about insider reports that they have heard that the plans have already been laid and the schedule is being set out for us to bomb and attack Iran. Now, Robert Perry of Consortium News talks about this being a turning point in this country. Actually, there are a lot of different turning points. Paul Krugman in his article today talked about Katrina being a turning point. And actually, let me read a little bit from that, because that really also goes to the same issue that I'm talking about. Krugman writes, there's a powerful political faction in this country that's determined to draw exactly the wrong issues from the Katrina debacle. And by the way, it's the two-year anniversary of Katrina. Namely, that the government always fails when it attempts to help people in need, so it shouldn't even try. Now, Mitt Romney said, I don't want the people who ran the Katrina cleanup to manage our health care system. But, you know, if he says that as if the Bush administration's practice of appointing incompetent cronies to key positions and refusing to hold them accountable, no matter how badly they perform, and by the way, Michael Chertoff still has his job, is that you're saying that as if that's the way government actually works, which is not. And Paul Krugman is right. I'm not sure that faction is losing that argument. The thing about conservative governance is that it can succeed by failing. When conservatives' politicians messed up, they foster a cynicism about government that may actually help their cause. And because they control the media, for the most part, because those five corporations are heavily conservative, the heads of those corporations, no matter how liberal the reporters may be, it doesn't really matter, because their jobs are determined on what the editors tell them to write and what their bosses tell them to write and what their bosses tell them to say. And when their livelihood is on the line like that, you can bet they're going to listen, especially when they're making so much money and they don't want to be in a situation like me, living in an air mattress in an unfurnished room, doing an internet radio show, perhaps, if you get my drift. But Krugman asks if Krugman says that future historians will see Katrina as a turning point. But there are other turning points. I personally think the turning point was the election of 2000. I think when we put into office George W. Bush instead of Al Gore, I think that was the turning point for America. That was when we officially went from republic to empire. But Robert Perry of Consortium News talks about the looming war with Iran as being that actual turning point. And you can say that the 2000 selection led up to it, but the actual turning point will be if we actually go into war with Iran. And it looks like that there's nothing that's going to stop it. I mean, Bush, they're pulling out the same advertising campaign that they pulled out for Iraq. Bush has been using the terms nuclear holocaust when it comes to Iran, and of course he'll deny it later that you know, blah, blah, blah. And again, the Iranians, whether they like us or not, and I'm sure that there's a lot of people in the government of Iran who don't like us, who call us the Great Satan and all that stuff. And, you know, they're a religious theocracy, which is not pleasant regardless of what religion you have. The truth of the matter is that the Iranian people, you know, they have nothing against us, and they're no threat to us. All this is about, once again, is just pure greed. And the doing something simply because they have the power to do it. And it's going to be bad for this country, and it's going to be bad for the world when this happens. And it's going to lay the groundwork for the destruction of the United States, basically. And you know what? To a certain extent, I welcome that, because I think we can become a better nation if we realize that we don't have the right to be global, to be globally dominant. Just because we have all the nukes doesn't give us the moral authority to rule over other people's lives. And I think we finally got to get to a point where no single nation has that power, whether it be the United States or Russia or Iran or Iraq or any country, that we have to start thinking about a community of human beings. I want to talk more about this. Let's take our last break. And we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I've been waiting for the old John Conyers to reappear, and there he was on Tuesday at a town hall meeting in Detroit. The head of the House Judiciary Committee finally declared his independence from Speaker Nancy Pelosi on the urgent question of impeachment. Said Conyers, "Nancy Pelosi has impeachment off the table, but that's off her table. It's not off John Conyers' table." That's a relief, since I thought Pelosi had permanently gagged Conyers on the subject. Not anymore. "Nancy Pelosi," he said, "cannot prevent me from introducing an impeachment resolution." He added, "I want you to know that I have no reticence, no reluctance, no hesitation to use the tool of impeachment whenever I feel it's appropriate." So what's his hesitation right now? When is a more appropriate time than now, after all the crimes Bush and Cheney have already committed? When is a more appropriate time than now, just as they're about to commit another heinous one by illegally attacking Iran? The old John Conyers this week put his toes back in the impeachment pool. It's time now for him to dive right in. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs name their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed Lesbian Bible Study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, like, "Thou shalt not lie with a man," so I don't, so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
All right, let's dance. Last 10 minutes or so of the show. Peter Godbold will be back live tonight, by the way, for Strictly Confidential. What a great show. What a great addition to the Head On Radio Network. You can join Pete here in the Head On Radio Network chat room. He just dropped in to say hello. He's been ill, but he's back. And he's back live tonight, and we're glad to have him. He's a great, like I said, just, you know, we have such a wonderful group of people on the Head On Radio Network. John Fox from Australia, Guy James, Dr. Bill O'Brien, of course, Bob Kincaid. So many people, so many great hosts. The Head On Radio Network has so much to offer. And we are the answer to media consolidation. We are using the one technology that may be the saving grace of the human race. Truly, because it's something that not only informs, but it helps people communicate. One of the most important technological advancements in history was the printing press. Because the printing press allowed much more books to get into circulation, which allowed a lot more people to have knowledge. Prior to those days, if you wanted to have a book copied, somebody had to literally write and make a hand-drawn copy of it, handwritten copy of it. And obviously it was a very expensive and time-consuming process to do, because somebody had to sit there and actually do it. But with the printing press, all that changed. And in fact, one of the documentaries I saw about the early Catholic Church, which was interesting to me, and I didn't even realize it, was that they wouldn't even let people read their own Bibles. The Catholic Church saying, we'll read it and we'll interpret it for you. But people wanted to read the Bibles. They wanted to know more. And, me, I'm not big on organized religion, but, to me, that's a basic right. You know, if you want to know about your religion, this is the book, right? This is the book that everything's based on. You should be able to read it. But the Catholic Church for years said, no, can't read it. And that's media consolidation. But then the printing press came out and a lot more people started reading and thinking and talking. And that's how you got the Enlightenment. And the Enlightenment is the basis upon everything that we believe here in this country. About our individual rights, our freedoms, about the role of government. It's all based on Enlightenment principles. And of course, the corporations and the religious entities that they have allied themselves with, they are against the Enlightenment and they're doing everything they can to destroy it. And they want to go back to the old, just basically exploit people days, which, still went on, even under the best of conditions, still went on in certain parts of the world. We have to think bigger if we want to overcome these problems, because, some of the things that we overcame in this country, we only used to overcome in this country. We have to start thinking about overcoming them all over the world, ladies and gentlemen. And when I talk about issues that politicians have to stand for, this is a biggie for me. Because we're reaching the point with technology where it really is a small world, where communication is instantaneous, and you have a tool such as the Internet, which is the most wonderful, fantastic tool there is. It's the only tool where a guy like me, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all the ships at sea, where a guy like me can get on the air and talk to people and have people talk back to me without having a huge transmitter, without having to go through a huge screening process. Well, that can be a good or a bad thing, obviously, but what I'm saying is, if I had to take the time to go through the usual stuff, it would take me years to get on the air. But it's not just that. It's people writing blogs that have had an effect on our politics. It's people going out and going in the chat rooms and communicating with one another. The printing press was wonderful, but if you wanted to write something, you still had to own a press, and that was expensive. Owning a computer, owning the equipment you need to put together even a show like this is relatively inexpensive. You can do a radio show like this, ladies and gentlemen, for under $400 very easily, very easily. And the bulk of that will be on the computer, right? Even if you're starting from scratch, if you're buying the computer, if you have to buy the computer, you're talking about less than $500. You get yourself a Eurorack mixer that costs about $80. You get yourself a nice microphone. The one I have cost $125, and I didn't pay for it. It was donated to me by one of my listeners, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful for all the help I can get, of course, in my current financial situation. But the point is, It's the most accessible thing. And even so, if you just want to write stuff, you don't even have to own a computer. It costs you nothing. You can go to the library if you live in a place that has a close public library. Just go on there. Even if they only let you on for a couple hours a day, it's still time you can read news, time you can talk to people, post messages, and have your opinion be known to however many people. If the world is going to be saved, this is the tool that's going to do it. It's already made an effect in this country, a small effect, because you still have the corporate power. I mean, the top, as Michael J. Cobb said in the interview with Bill Moritz said, that the top news websites are still corporate owned, but that doesn't mean that they control everything. And of course, they're working very hard to limit the control. Well, that the net neutrality stuff is very, very important. And yes, Bob Kincaid, the conservatives do hate public libraries. They hate anybody getting anything for free. They hate anybody having any fun. To the conservatives in this country, from the beginning, it's never been about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's about the pursuit of profit. And you can turn that into any big issue. Like I mentioned yesterday on the show, the gun control issue. It's not about the right to bear arms. It's about the right to sell them. And, you know, and I was thinking about this, and I haven't said it yet, but let me say it now. You know, the problem is when you have these big corporations is that they're not even interested in doing what they do, because what they do is just a sideline for something else. For example, McDonald's is not a corporation that wants to just make cheap food served quickly to people. They're not interested in that. They're interested in global domination, selling cheap burgers as a way of doing that. The Coca-Cola company, it doesn't want to make money by selling a tasty soft drink to people. The Coca-Cola company wants to rule the world. That's their problem. And that's the issues we have to deal with. And it's up to us as citizens, and the only way we can do that as citizens is by working together. It's up to us to try to prevent that, to try to keep them in their place, to say, no, you are a soft drink company. Your job is to make money selling pleasantly flavored soft drinks. And in the real free marketplace, if somebody comes up with a tastier one, then we'll buy that one instead. But they don't want a free market. They want to dominate the market. They want to wipe out all competition. They want to be the Acme mousetrap company that slams down anybody that does innovative ideas. It's really, to a certain extent, it's not that much different from communism, to be perfectly honest. Because that's, you know, just as communism drove down innovation, big corporations drive down innovation. That's why radio sucks. Because they're not interested in innovation. They're not interested in just localizing and letting people, you know, play it on. And that's why internet radio was so great. And I'm not just talking about talk shows like my show or the Head On Network. I'm talking about internet music radio stations. That's why they're great, because people are playing what they want to hear. That's why it's great for rock groups. That's why peer-to-peer, all this supposedly free stuff that the Record Administration, the biggest, fascist, nastiest organizations that's out there that want to you know, sue old ladies because their grandkids were downloading a couple of free songs on their computer. That's why they hate that. And they don't even understand, they don't even recognize that it's bad business for them to clamp that down. Did you know that during the height of Napster, when Napster was going strong and all the peer-to-peer was running like that, that CD sales went up? And they went up because people got the opportunity to hear songs, and people want to be loyal. People want to say, hey, I like this, I'm going to go out and buy the CD and support this artist. People want to do that. But there's two things that's preventing them. One is that those people don't get the exposure that they need in order to get that audience. And two, people just aren't earning enough money, which is another sort of thing. You know, when they're charging $17, $18 for a CD, which is ridiculous, when you can get a DVD for $10, for $2, you can get a DVD. And you're selling CDs still for $18, $19, screw that noise. And that's where we stand. And I would continue, but we have to break off the show here. That's okay. Every now and then when I get on a good rant going, it's all right. Hey, the Cup of Joe radio show has been produced by the Head On Radio Network. Our good friend Bob Kincaid running the show from the studios in West Virginia. We are sponsored by UnreportedNews.net. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news. If you miss the show, you can always listen in on the White Rose Society. My archives are there, WhiteRoseSociety.org. America back on track, feet and clothes on all of your Head On Radio Network. Have a good weekend. Until Monday, you, all of you out there, hey, let's get back to work.
I want a cup of Joe. I crave a plate of Dave. Oh, in a jar of Joe. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll dip a mug of Doug with the creamer of steam.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Because that's just a trip. That's a trip down the rabbit hole that my brain won't.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush this morning is expected to publicly address the crisis for homeowners trying to avoid foreclosure on their subprime mortgages. During a press conference, the president is expected to unveil a plan to prevent a wave of defaults. He'll also introduce reforms to the system. Iraq is on the agenda today when President Bush meets at the Pentagon with his defense secretary and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. An Australian newspaper quotes U.S. General David Petraeus saying the troop surge in Iraq is working. The general says the U.S. strategy is reducing violence and al-Qaeda's influence in the region. The military said the deaths of a Marine and soldier Wednesday in the Anbar province brought the U.S. death toll in August to 79. The total is considerably lower than the number of casualties during the spring and early summer. A U.S. Air Force C-130 transporting Congress members was fired upon as it departed Baghdad International Thursday. Flares were used, along with standard evasive maneuvers to dodge the attack. The plane, passengers, and crew safely completed their flight. Iraqi officials today announced about 1,500 prisoners will be released from the country's jails during the holy month of Ramadan. Goodwill gestures are traditional at that time. Ramadan begins in mid-September. South Korea is denying it. However, there are various reports saying those 19 missionaries released yesterday by the Taliban were freed after Seoul paid a $2 million ransom. Officials fear the gesture might set a precedent with more kidnappings to come. 100 or so Pakistani soldiers Islamic militants claim to have kidnapped yesterday have been found safe. Authorities say the men were escorting a food convoy when bad weather forced them to seek refuge. In an interview broadcast in Australia today, President Bush said it is important for the U.S. to maintain a strong presence in Asia. The president noted that should China turn hostile, its increasingly strong military might become a threat. Idaho Senator Larry Craig is close to resigning since the recent revelations about his June arrest for disorderly conduct at a Minneapolis airport men's room. In Des Moines, a county judge has ruled unconstitutional Iowa's 10-year-old ban on gay marriage. Within hours of the decision, gay couples began filing for marriage licenses. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Coming up, science and business news, including an uptick in the stock market.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Public health officials and environmentalists urge the EPA to strengthen ozone pollution control standards in Southern California and Philadelphia yesterday, saying it would dramatically reduce the death rate caused by smog. U.S. Coast Guard and Puerto Rican authorities are investigating a three-mile bunker oil spill endangering Puerto Rico's threatened coral reefs. Bunker oil is used in older ships. An internal Energy Department audit recommends procedural changes in the plants that stockpile U.S. nuclear weapons. Investigators discovered that classified bomb components had been misplaced. The U.S. economy grew at a 4% rate in the latest quarter, exceeding initial government forecasts, and U.S. factory orders have risen 3.7% versus an expected 3.4%. Sears announced a two-year low in profits and a 40% plunge in net income, but the luxury market is doing quite well. PPR's profit more than doubled in the first half of 2007. The owner of Yves Saint Laurent, Gucci, and Bottega Veneta saw sales rise 54%. Inspectors from the FTC say that their investigation proves big oil companies did not conspire to raise gas prices last summer. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is up 98.5 points at 13,337. The NASDAQ is up 22 at 2587. S&P 500 is up 13. Oil is up 66 cents. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
You are tuned in to America Back on Track here on the Quality News Network. That music from the Alloy Orchestra. Wonderful stuff. It's the track for the Buster Keaton re-release of The General. Came out in 2003. Coming up today here on America Back on Track, we spoke with Sam Farr, Congressman of the 17th District, Liberal Democrat, on Friday, and we've got that interview for you today coming up after our observations on the news. In our second half hour, Mike Robbins, whose attitude is to focus on the good stuff. That's the name of his book, Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. And we are going to have all of that here today. Did I say it's Thursday, August 30th? Well, it still is. Today on Seat Notes, we're going to talk about the regrettable need for circumspection. When you're on the telephone and saying things, who's listening? First, our quote of the day is from Buddha, who said, three things cannot be hidden, the sun, the moon, and the truth. Unless you're in Congress. Some observations on the news. Fast Freddie Thompson is expected to finally, officially, and formally enter the presidential race starting this afternoon with a phone call to 1,000 party faithfuls with a formal announcement or several scheduled next week, including the obligatory Jay Leno appearance. Thompson ain't going to win, but he's going to knock Giuliani and Romney right out of the race. This despite Freddie's unofficial campaign being plagued with screw-ups, some larger than others. There have been questions raised about the truthfulness of members of his campaign staff. The guy picked to run the campaign was dumped, and several staffers followed him out the door. The person who was to be in charge of communications was deemed unqualified, and Thompson came up with someone who is a veteran of campaigns with McCain, Jeb Bush, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Apparently there is, quote-unquote, consternation, that's the word used by the Associated Press, within the campaign, Thompson's campaign, about the role of his wife, Jerry, who is two dozen years younger than her husband and prone to broad displays of cleavage. The Pentagon has spent more than $60 million, which isn't a lot for them, developing a ray gun that causes intense pain when its beam hits someone as far away as 500 yards. One of the scientists who developed it as part of a non-lethal weapons program called on the military to use it in Iraq to break up demonstrations where otherwise people were getting killed. The ray gun is called the Active Denial System. I have no idea why they call it that. It wasn't explained in the article. Active denial system for a ray gun. The Pentagon, however, says they won't deploy the weapon because it might be perceived as a torture device. Folks, I am not making this stuff up. I couldn't make this stuff up. Maybe they should call it the Abu Ghraib active denial system. And we're paying for it. That's the craziest part. The White House and the Pentagon, otherwise known as the five-sided funny farm, are quibbling over the new GAO report on Iraq. The report, which has yet to be formally released, says that most of the benchmarks the Iraqi government was supposed to be aiming for have not been reached. The administration thinks the report is too harsh. Come on, this is like moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic. How are things really going in Iraq? Well, dozens of people were murdered at a religious celebration last week. Oh, well, that sounds harsh. How about only dozens were killed? You may remember the group ACT, America Coming Together, that was particularly active in the 2004 elections, supporting mostly Democrats. Perhaps you even contributed to their efforts since they raised $137 million. Anyway, they've agreed to pay a fine of $775,000, a small chunk of what they raised, to the Federal Elections Commission for violating federal campaign finance rules. Still a lot of money wasted. China is a disaster for miners. We are startled at the loss of 8 people who were in a mine in Utah and 12 last year in West Virginia. But in China, they lose 5,000 miners every year. In a recent cave-in, 2 brothers were trapped and survived by eating coal and drinking urine for 5 days. The men said they became so hungry they couldn't even crawl. Said one about what they had to drink, "You can only take small sips, and when you're finished, you just want to cry." They kept up their spirits with humor. One brother told the other, "I told my brother, your wife is going to have to marry someone else," replied the other brother. "I said my wife could find a rich man in Shenyang, but then I thought, I have 2 children, and my wife is ugly, so it would be hard for her to remarry." Anyway, they escaped. Maybe false hopes continue. Meanwhile, false hopes continue for the 6 miners in Utah, where they have been underground for 3 weeks without any sounds from them. Another hole was being drilled into the Deadly Mountain. Search crews were said to be, quote, hoping a miracle could happen. Keep the faith, baby! Or is it praise the fertilizer and pass a collection plate? The former Reverend Ted Haggard, who did sex and drugs with a male prostitute, wrote former parishioners asking for financial support while he and his wife go back to school. He was gonna, he said, become a counselor at a halfway house, but the guy running the halfway house said, no thank you. And unfortunately, the organization Haggard chose to manage the fundraising is headed by a twice-convicted sex offender. And it was the twice-convicted sex offender who refused to work with Haggard. Maybe they could all get together with Larry Craig and form Hypocrites Unanimous. Only in America, a Missouri woman gave her 2 dogs a bunch of Michael Vick football cards, which they chewed on. Then she put them up for sale on eBay. She made $7,400 from them. The money is going to be donated to the Humane Society. What a planet. Coming up next, an interview with Sam Farr, Liberal Democrat, representing the 17th in California. And in our second half hour, Mike Robbins, focus on the good stuff, the power of appreciation. Stay tuned. You're listening to America Back on Track on the Quality News Network.
For an insider's look at quality news coverage, be sure to read 2 of the latest books by award-winning journalist and author Tony Seaton. The Quality Interview and Don't Mess with the Press transport the reader into the world of journalism, including the ups and downs of network news coverage and what it's really like reporting the important events we see happening every day around the world. Don't Mess with the Press is an intriguing and engaging chronicle of Tony's early career, beginning with his start as a copy boy for ABC News back in the 1970s to working his way up to become producer of network news interviews for Barbara Walters. The Quality Interview is the definitive guide to the art of the interview. Learn interviewing basics and much more, including how to get crucial information out of even the toughest interview. For more on Don't Mess with the Press and The Quality Interview by Tony Seaton, visit our website at www.qualitynewsnetwork.com.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for: quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
We're most pleased to have with us in the studio today Sam Farr. He is a representative of the folks here in the Monterey area. Sam, you're back from, you've got your August recess, and you're talking to your constituents. How do they feel about the job that's being done in Congress?
Well, you can understand why there's a low opinion of Congress, but there's also a low information or no little information about what Congress is actually accomplishing because it's been so caught up on where we can't, where we get stuck. Particularly where we can't govern because the president vetoes everything and refuses to participate. And he's, you know, the tripart stool of getting the job done is the House, the Senate, and the president. They're all co-equal in the ability to, and the necessity to have new law and new expenditures. But nonetheless, Congress has been accomplishing a lot. And I think when we show them that we've only been in power for 6 months, and we've passed all these new bills on raising the minimum wage and providing for more student loans and requiring benchmarks for Iraq and doing a whole new energy policy, a whole new and a whole new education policy. I mean, we are very busy, and we're putting out a lot of product.
There are a lot of people who think that after the November elections, things would have been different. Is it that their expectations were too high?
Things are different. Things are incredibly different, but what they don't see is the all of them being in law because the president is blocking them.
Well, Iraq is obviously a good case. We are doing, we're taping this interview on Friday the 24th. A tremendous amount has come down this week with Senator Carl Levin calling for Maliki to be replaced by the Iraqi parliament, by Bush on Tuesday saying, okay, he's very disappointed, Ryan Crocker extremely disappointed. Then on Wednesday, Bush is saying that Maliki is his guy, his man, he's got a difficult job. Thursday, the NIE report comes out. And Friday or Thursday, Warner says that we should be drawing down the troops. It seems very chaotic on this front.
Well, it's very interesting. The chairman of the Defense Appropriations Committee, Jack Murtha, who's got very well known once he indicated that he was breaking from the president and opposed the war in Iraq and thought we ought to bring the troops home, and certainly is the one who holds the purse strings. I interviewed him. I have a television interview that I do every month. And the last question I asked him is, Jack, the bottom line is, when are we going to be out of Iraq? And he looked at the TV camera and he said, by this fall, December.
This year?
Yeah, this was months ago, before all of this stuff. Because we know that all of the indicators and the fact that the Iraqi government is not getting better, but more falling apart and is less able, that there's no way that we can, and the American public doesn't want us to be there, there's no way we can just sustain this. So it's interesting because all this data that's coming out and all these discussions right now are just, we're getting out of Iraq. It's not whether we're going to get out of Iraq, it's when and how fast. And that's the real discussion.
Indeed, Peter Pace, General Peter Pace, is saying that he's talking about pulling out troops. Let's talk about FISA a moment. Just before you went on your recess, there was this vote that many people are saying gave the Bush administration even more authority than they had. Why was it ever taken out of the courts?
Well, remember when we passed the, whatever it was, the Homeland Security or whatever legislation, the Patriot Act or one of those, we gave the authority back then on the global war on terrorism to the administration on international spying and wiretapping and such that they could fast-track through the FISA courts. And what happened is that they didn't. They just read that language as their ability to bypass the FISA courts, or the ability to get to have to go to the requirement they have to go to a judge and get a warrant. And so Congress had hearings, the Democrats, and we came into power about the Republicans refused to take action, and they always defended it as, you know, this is all about fighting terrorism. Why would you want to have to go through these sort of civil liberties or to
minor points?
A minor point. Yeah. And what we've proved in the hearings was that none of the bureaucratic claims and delays that the administration had made had ever stopped them from getting these warrants. So the process itself and the law had never been a problem. So what we did is attempted to codify it. And the president has resisted, and the Republicans have resisted. And that is the battle. What we adopted, and frankly it was in our face, because the Senate, the House passed a version that would specifically laid out that you have to go back and do the FISA warrant process. The Senate didn't take up our bill, but passed one that the president wanted. He said he'd veto the House bill. And then they left town. So it was thrown into the House at 3 o'clock on Saturday morning. We were still in session. And there was a big debate in the Democratic caucus of whether to take up the bill. And finally, I think the weak members from weak districts, I mean, not that they're weak in person, but weak in Democratic support, felt that if anything happened, any incident happened while we were out in August, that we would forever be branded the party that caused that incident. And so, in their own minds, they decided that they would support, wanted the bill brought to the floor. Well, the Republicans all voted for it, and I think 32 Democrats out of over 230. So we had over, you know, we had over 200 Democrats opposing it. The bill has a sunsets in 6 months, so they've got to adopt a new bill. And our debate among ourselves is, why the hell did we do this, and what's the new bill going to look like? And we're, even though we're on vacation, there are numerous members that are working on the draft of the new bill, and we will be hopefully supporting that and getting it and getting the Senate to support it when we get back.
More of our interview with Sam Farr right after these messages.
Hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission. Mary Knoll.
Hulhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah. Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but, of course, the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week. Yes.
Taking money out.
Taking money out and putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
You're tuned to America Back on Track. We're talking with Representative Sam Farr.
Sam, also out this week was the report on the CIA in the pre-9/11, which was just, I mean, done by the CIA Inspector General and castigated Tenet, George Tenet, beyond belief. Do you think there might be a move afoot to have him return his Medal of Freedom for his abject failure to protect us?
I don't know. It's pretty hard to get somebody to get back a medal that you've given them, but... You know, I don't know if there's attempts in Congress to do that. As I said, we've been out of session for several weeks now, and maybe there is, but I hadn't heard of it, and I don't know what procedure one would use and had it ever been used before. History will be more of a judge of I think, what information we have about how he used that office than whether he got a medal or not. And I think, though, the point is... I'm so glad that people are coming out, because let me just tell you what happened back in October of 2004 just before the November election, 2002, and the president had brought the bill to the floor, and this was all Karl Rove. He knew the elections were up. He wanted to get the president boosted up. He wanted to use the terrorism card. So they bring this bill to the floor about invading Iraq. Just a couple of weeks before the election, knowing that Democrats couldn't run away from that, and shoved it in our face. Well, we had hearings with the intelligence agencies, and it was very interesting, because if you're inclined not to want to go to war, which is where I came from, I think you listen a little bit better than others who are just worried about their reelection. Because what I heard from the intelligence agencies, when the question was asked, is Iraq an immediate threat to the United States, yes or no? And there were five of the big five intelligence agencies sitting there. Every one of them said no. And I thought, that's it. They're not a threat, no matter whether they have these so-called weapons of mass destruction or not. Whatever they have in the country, they can't put it together to help hurt us. Then why are we going to invade them? And isn't this a global war on terrorism? Shouldn't we be asking our global partners to help set the checks and balances on Saddam Hussein? And frankly, one could argue that we already had, that those were in place, and that he was on the downhill anyway, and wouldn't have survived this kind of international pressure and boycotting and so on. It really did warrant an invasion. I think so many people have forgotten that that was the intelligence reports. Now, I think what happens is that the White House just spun these things. And as you know, what we did with Niger and the so-called uranium leak and all that, and the outing of Valerie Plame was all about spinning. It's a false spin.
But, Sam, you know, yesterday I did an interview with a woman who was informed about cognitive dissonance, and she said, you know, it's fascinating. The Republicans simply control the debate. They control the language. They say, you Democrats won't support our troops. You are soft on communism. I mean national security, this sort of thing. When you and I talk, it makes so much more sense than if I'm just reading the wires and we get the vanilla-ized reports. Congress today, according to a field poll in California, has its lowest rating since 1996, worse than the Republican-led Congress. If you're doing the right things, how do you get the story out?
Well, I think you have to look back as how did the Republicans capture this, and they did it by literally private Republican conservative money, creating think tanks back in the 80s. You know, Congress was always in the hands of the Democrats. They could win a presidency, but they couldn't get the presidency to get much done as long as the Congress was in the hands of the Democrats. So how do you, and Newt Gingrich sort of set the new stage by getting up and just bashing the institution.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a new approach to it. And rather than, you know, arguing among yourselves, in the forum of debate in Congress and holding the rules to be, fair and just so that the minorities got their viewpoint, he used the minority to attack the institution on television. And he would start it as a party of one. And when he finished, he was Speaker of the House. And how did he do it? Along the way, there was millions, and some say billions, of private monies spent on think tanks just of trying to take the traditional Republican message had no residence. So the money was spent on how do you take that agenda and figure out how to say it better, reframe it.
Mm-hmm. It's the talking points. And what he did was he sent out hundreds and hundreds of audio cassettes with these talking points to Republican challengers for the 94, 96,
yes,
98
and,
elections.
And they were,
and it worked.
And they were doing the news meeting, which you were in. They just inundated them with 5 or 6 or 10 faxes per host per day.
Right.
And they'd never seen this stuff. So all of a sudden, here was some easy information to use. Remember, all the words were very good. Words like "No Child Left Behind," which was,
right.
You know, how could anybody argue against that? What a beautiful expression. And then no funding for it. And part of that, let's go to privatization under that. We're not going to let the government leaves the child behind, but if we just give vouchers to people and establish private schools, for-profit schools, you know, somehow it'll be taken care of. The concept of clear skies.
The blue skies for more coal emissions.
And healthy forests. Cut them down. Make them healthier. And the list goes on and on, that the phraseology that they've used, the terminology. And I think right after the last election, where we got river, what do you call it, the ad against Kerry, the swift boats. We got swift boated, which is essentially was a spin they did. And I think that the American public, you know, who have been so interested in sort of getting instant information, instant gratification, the Republicans have learned how to do the super sales job of taking, sending you a, you know, selling you a lemon, thinking you're buying a diamond, and they're so good at it, and the Democrats always get pushed back because they keep right now. If you're on the floor, you will hear Republicans get up and talk about every bill. Here go the Democrats again raising taxes. This bill has nothing to do about taxes. Nothing. There's no new money in here at all. And they just keep repeating it day after day. And all of a sudden people think, oh, the Democrats are raising taxes. You can't raise taxes without a president's signature. This president is not going to sign any tax bill. So this whole idea that the Democrats are raising taxes is just a way to get out there to do cleverly, to give that psychological implant. Oh, yeah, this is the party race. Or the party hasn't done anything. We've done more in 6 months than the Republicans did in 10 years in every factual corner. We've had more hearings, more days of session, more votes, more substance, more action than ever. And you hear, the Democrats haven't done anything. They're in power and they haven't done anything. And the pollsters are now reflecting that kind of a Republican spin. It's difficult. It's difficult when you're the party of power, and you can't get your message across because, frankly, the message we try to get across is a more substantive message, and that isn't a cute phrase. It's bigger than that. And
well, maybe you have to change tactics. I mean, you know, the impeachment issue that we've talked about before, you're supporting Kucinich's?
Well, the impeachment, I mean, I'll support these. I'm supporting every bill in Congress that has to do with impeachment, censorship, or whatever. But in reality, that's exactly what the Republicans would like us to do, because we would consume all our time. We'd never be able to talk about what we're doing in education, what we're doing in health care reform, and what we're doing in social. Remember, we're raising the minimum wage. We're doing a lot of these pocketbook issues for the middle class. We'd never be able to do any of that because we'd be all focused on impeachment. They'd love to tie us up on that. They can use every procedural rule to delay it. And then they would just march it out all the way to Election Day, and we would be, all the Democrats would be talking about impeachment. Meanwhile, they'd be talking about electing a new president. So I think that the last thing we want to do is fall into that Republican trap. They would love the impeachment discussion.
You know, we've got this issue of reality versus perception, and if you lose the perception battle, the reality battle is probably not going to matter.
Well, the perception that, you know, you just impeach overnight, it took 13 months with the Republicans lockstep after having a multi-million dollar funded prosecutor in Ken Starr and having him do all the research, publish all the data, be the prosecuting lawyer before the Republican Judiciary Committee, lining up all the votes, having all the articles, coming to the floor, having 4 days of impeachment debate, overwhelmingly voting him for it with a Republican support, and going to the Senate and tying up the country. That took, with the Republicans controlling it all and with his special counsel, which we don't have anymore, took him 13 months.
Then there must be some other tactics, because last Friday night the administration put out a message that said that the states, in order to provide insurance coverage for working poor, had to cover 95% of the poorest people in their states, and that can't be done, apparently. So here is, we've got the coal mining, they're going to decapitate every mountain in West Virginia. I'm not talking as a partisan here, Sam. I'm just, the people I talk to are Republicans, Democrats, Bruce Fine, for example, who say someone's got to stop this.
Well, there are ways of stopping it at all levels, at state, local, and federal. And I think the Congress, thinking this president has been in power now for 7 years, and all but the last 6 months of it has had a Republican-controlled Senate and House, has been unable to succeed in his biggest endeavors. Social Security privatization totally failed.
Well, the Republicans were strongly opposed to that too. So,
they weren't opposed until the Democrats took it to the hall meetings. And you know, we've been home for a month. I can tell you, my town hall meetings, and I've had a lot of them. They've not been, for the first time, there's usually a lot of really angry people at them. Mm-hmm. They've been passionate, but they're not angry, and it's interesting. And they want this impeachment. They want to, you know, they're passionate about saying this can't go on, and this president has to be censored. If you don't do it, what does it tell the future presidents? I said, well, you know, one of your all these censorship impeachment dads are being carried by Dennis Kucinich, and they said, well, we got to do this so we can't trust the next president. I said, well, what if the next president is Dennis Kucinich? Don't you think? So I said, don't think that this is, you have to do this now to teach a future president. Let's let them on their own merits and get back to following the Constitution. But democracy doesn't operate overnight. It's not instant gratification. It's a struggle, and if you don't think we have people that are as emotional and as compassionate as ever have been in the history of the United States serving in Congress right now, then you don't know Congress. And they're on both sides of the aisle. So there's not a lack of political will and desire and suggestion, and people don't watch these debates. I don't know. I've been in this job for elective office for some 30-odd years, and I've never seen the public so naive about sort of like what is really going on and how much progress is being made, because this country would be in far worse shape if we weren't able to check and balance some of the extremes of this administration. And I think, indeed, Nancy Pelosi's put us, the new speaker, has really put us on a fast track for recovery. But we can't have that recovery really fully implemented until the team is together. And we have a very weak team in the Senate. You know, you don't even have 51 Democrats there. We need to, because of their own rules, they can block everything in their House if they don't have 60 votes. It means everything the Democrats want to do that is controversial. You need to get 10 Republicans to essentially vote for cloture so that you can stop a filibuster. Mm-hmm. So we're stuck in the Senate, and then you've got the president unwilling to sign any of these things or to provide any leadership. I think that we're accomplishing a hell of a lot. Considered they were handicapped with a very weak Senate and an opposition president. I hope that in November there's a sweeping change, and you will see a team in there that will, I think, provide a renaissance for America.
Congressman Sam Farr, thank you for being with us on America Back on Track.
Thank you.
Again, that interview was conducted last Friday, August 24th. Amazing things have happened already this week. Gonzalez is out. They only have to impeach Bush and, what's his name, Cheney. Yeah, right. Interesting situation. We appreciate very much that Sam Farr could spend the time with us to elucidate the situation as he sees it on Capitol Hill. We will be back with Mike Robbins, whose book is Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation, right after these messages. Please stay tuned. You're listening to America Back on Track on the Quality News Network.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Are you one of so many people who wish they could wake up in the morning and look at the clock without fumbling for glasses first? I've got news for you. Your wish can come true. Most cases of nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism can be corrected by the laser procedure known as LASIK. Now, is this procedure without risk or guaranteed? No, but complications are extremely rare, and the outcomes are almost always positive. And if your results aren't exactly as expected, you can be retreated in most cases for no additional cost. You should be realistic about your expectations, though, especially if you're over 40, because unless you have what's called monovision, you will still need your glasses for reading. See your eye doctor about LASIK. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
We're back. America Back on Track here on the Quality News Network. Joining us by telephone now is Mike Robbins. He is the author of Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. Mike, welcome to America Back on Track.
Tony, thanks for having me on.
So, good stuff, huh? I read that you were born and raised in Oakland, California. You were raised primarily by a single mom, attended inner city schools growing up, graduated from Stanford with a B.A. in American Studies and a specialization in race and ethnicity.
Yep.
Very neat. And then you went on to play for the Kansas City Royals. That's a baseball team, for those who don't know that. And now you are a coach to Fortune 500 companies and individuals. And what are you coaching people to do?
Well, primarily, Tony, I'm actually coaching people to focus on the good stuff, which is what this new book I just wrote is all about. You know, I appreciate you sharing some of the different pieces of my background, and I know as people hear some of that, it sounds a little eclectic, if you will, but, you know, my big learning came at a very young age when I was playing baseball. You know, I got drafted by the Royals out of Stanford, as you mentioned, and my goal since I was a little kid was to pitch in the major leagues. And my third season in the minor leagues with Kansas City, I blew out my pitching arm, and just like that, my career was over. And it was a, you know, very difficult thing for me to deal with and to sort of move through in terms of a personal process. But as I look back on my whole, you know, 18 years of professional, not professional baseball, organized baseball, 3 years of professional baseball, I realized I only had one regret, and that was that I didn't appreciate it. I was so busy trying to make it that I didn't spend any time focusing on the good stuff about what I was doing. And my work for the last 10 years has been all about teaching people simple and practical things that they can do in their lives, in their relationships, in their businesses, to have people use the power of appreciation as a way to motivate themselves and others. And that's really what the book's all about.
I think eclectic makes for the most fascinating backgrounds and creates that it's more spice for the pot, as it were. And I think it's terribly valuable when I hear people, and it's much less these days, say, well, I have my 5-year plan, and I'm thinking, 5 years? What's 5 minutes from now going to bring?
Yeah, no kidding.
What?
Well, the world is changing so quickly, and, you know, some of the things in life that are biggest challenges end up ultimately being, you know, some of our greatest assets. I mean, for me, you know, I grew up in Oakland and inner city schools and, you know, getting picked on and not having a lot of money as a kid, raised by a single mom. You know, my dad suffered from bipolar disorder, so there were some challenges in my life, but even in the midst of all of that, you know, I always had a tendency to be a pretty happy kid, and I kind of looked at life from the perspective of, you know, there are some challenging things going on, but we really have a choice as to what we choose to focus on. And that was when I was little. And as I've gotten older and now interacted with so many people in the different organizations that I consult with and speak to, as well as young people all around the country, I find fundamentally, as challenging as life can be these days, it's really a choice about what we choose to pay attention to.
And particularly how we view things. I mean, it's our take on things that defines whether, you know, this is good news or bad news, or someone with the best example to my mind is you miss a plane and the plane crashes.
Yeah.
But it's all within our own capability. It's the only arena we have to work in where we decide what our response is going to be to something.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of my greatest influences in my life, personally and professionally, is a man named Richard Carlson, who wrote a book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and It's All Small Stuff. Now, Richard actually happened to write the foreword for my book, and over the last number of years, he and I became very, very close friends, and he mentored me. Sadly, as some people know who are listening, maybe some don't, Richard passed away very suddenly in December earlier this year, actually just 3 weeks after he wrote the foreword for my book, only at the age of 45. And as sad as that was and still is for me and many people close to Richard, you know, he taught me so much, not just through his books, but also through his influence on me, about really not taking things so seriously and enjoying and appreciating every moment, which is really what Richard's, not only his message was about, but his life. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen, as he would always teach me and others. And sadly, when something tragic like that happens, I think there's even a way in the midst of tragedy or sudden death that we can also stop and be able to appreciate people and life, which is one of the nice parts, if there are nice parts, when something really awful happens.
When you talk about appreciating the good stuff, I'm in a business, obviously. I'm reading the news wires maybe 10 hours a day, and there's a lot of stuff that is not very good. But it is nonetheless, it doesn't get me down, or any good journalist. It's fascinating because it's almost like watching the flow of a river. It's a flow of history, and you wonder how it's going to affect people and rising from adversity, which is what so much of it is. How do you define, then, what is negative?
Well, I personally think that it's not a black and white, this is good and that's bad kind of world. I mean, there are a lot of very difficult, challenging, negative things that happen. I mean, you know as well as anybody, given that you said you watch the news wires 10 hours a day. I think it's really a function of what we do with it. And, like, take this on a personal level in terms of emotions. There's this whole notion that good emotions are happiness and excitement and gratitude, and bad emotions are sadness and anger and, you know, frustration. Well, I look at it a little differently. I think an emotion is positive when it's effectively and appropriately expressed, and it's negative when it's not. So when, you know, a lot of times in our life, our fear, our anger, and other quote-unquote negative emotions have been very useful and valuable to us. But only they become problematic when we don't express them. But positive emotions, the same thing. If we're happy, if we're in love with someone and we don't express it, it can sort of get twisted and turn negative. I mean, a classic example, the guy who killed John Lennon was a huge John Lennon fan. And it was some weird unexpressed love that came out in that really negative way. So I think that we can do the same thing with what do with what's going on in the world. We look at the things that are happening, and some of them are very serious. Can we choose to be a proactive, positive force for change and for possibility, if you will, or do we sit around and just complain about it with our friends and how horrible everything is?
That sounds good. You know, it's a couple of beers. I think that's very on target, and I think also whatever comes to our mind has to be dealt with, whether it be a thought or a feeling, because it comes from wherever we decide, God or the universe or whatever. That's put in our plate, in our arena, in our mind for a purpose.
Yes.
And too often we tend to say, I don't want to deal with that, or I don't want to think about that. On the other hand, we can often move our own internal psychological structure around so that we berate ourselves unnecessarily.
Yeah.
And that's what I sense that is the core of your work now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really think, you know, Tony, there's an epidemic in our culture. As abundant and as successful as we are here in America, there's this epidemic of us being really critical, especially personally towards ourselves. I mean, constantly, we all know people who are very successful, who are beautiful, who are talented, and when you listen to them talk about themselves, all you hear is all the things they don't like about themselves. And it's just, it's a little bit crazy-making sometimes, and we all have people in our lives that, you know, they're really wonderful, they're just the last person to understand that or get that. And that part, to me, is a bit perplexing, and I understand it because I have those own thoughts and feelings myself, but really my work is all about, not in an arrogant, conceited way, but really teaching people how to appreciate and really celebrate who they are so that they can do that for others, so that they can go create the things they want in their lives.
And as one life changes, another life can be impacted, and then we can have world peace and harmony and good stuff on TV.
Absolutely.
Well, let's hold the dreams down a little bit to just peace on Earth. We only have a minute left. What is the resistance you find to these ideas, Mike?
Well, the biggest resistance, I think, is that internal negative voice that I call the gremlin. So people have a lot of stuff in their own minds negative towards themselves, but also there's this kind of notion in our culture that focusing on good stuff is somehow soft. It's sappy. It's what we do here in Northern California, and we all sing Kumbaya together. Mm. This is about results. I'm a result-oriented former athlete who likes to see people succeed and win and make things happen. So I find that some resistance there, but it's also a little bit vulnerable for people to really focus on the good stuff and express it to the people they love and care about and to themselves. So some of those things are the resistances. But once people move past that, which they often do in my workshops and when they read my book, they realize it's pretty simple and it's pretty powerful stuff.
And when they get it, it's very neat. Sort of like an emotional light bulb lighting up, I bet.
Exactly. I love to see that.
Wonderful. Mike Robbins, the author of Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. I hope you'll come back and share some more thoughts with us another time here on America Back on Track.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Grand. And we will be back with more right here on the Quality News Network. We've got Seat Notes coming up. Stay tuned. You're tuned to America Back on Track.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? Two-thirds are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
What are you doing?
Fertilizing the lawn. Do you want to help?
No, not really. But didn't you just do that last week?
Yeah, I did. I want the lawn to be really lush and green this year.
Dad, what happens when those sprinklers come on?
We give the grass a good long drink.
That water runs off with the fertilizer in it and gets into the bay, or it can harm the fish.
So what should I do?
Use just the minimum recommended amount. The lawn will be just as green, and you'll be saving our ocean.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hello, I'm CHP Officer Felix Isararas. Law enforcement officers throughout the state are committed to removing drunk drivers from California roadways before they kill or injure themselves, or worse, an innocent victim. Right now, local law enforcement and the CHP are conducting DUI checkpoints to find drunk drivers and keep California roads safe.
Always designate a sober driver. And if you see a drunk driver on the road, call 911. A message from the Office of Traffic Safety and California Highway Patrol.
Before past the hour, and time for Seat Notes here on America Back on Track. It was 3 years ago that I was having a conversation with my longtime friend Joey about the then disaster of the Bush administration. That was only 2004. Think of what's happened since. And since the Democrats got in control of Congress 9 months ago, you wonder sometimes if they've made matters worse. Their final vote in favor of giving the administration total control of wiretapping American citizens without judicial oversight, which had existed since at least 1978 with the FISA limitations, their vote before they went on their August recess was to approve the limitless access of the Bush administration to all of our communications here in the United States. That's actually unconstitutional, but it's going to take a while for the courts to say so, and then, well, there'll be appeals and more appeals. But it's hard to imagine that any honest judge would support the new law, considering the rather overarching Fourth Amendment of our Constitution, which says in 54 simple words, quote, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects, against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. That's the Fourth Amendment. It's very clear. They were very smart back then. We're not very smart now. Not very complicated indeed, and even the black-robed nine will understand that what Bush asked for and what the Congress gave him was in violation therein of our constitutional rights. Bush, we might not be surprised at. He's just a puppet, and he and Cheney can never get enough power, even if they don't know what to do with it sometimes. The Congress, especially the 16 Democrats in the Senate, including card-carrying liberals and others, all of whom should have known better, a lot better, who voted for this legislation, should resign no later than when the Supreme Court calls them on their grossly inappropriate vote. Anyway, it was back a few years ago, before it had all gotten this bad, that my friend Joey was complaining, justly, about the grotesquerie that had befallen our nation in the form of the Bush boy. And he asked rhetorically something to the effect of, why do only the good ones get assassinated? Good question. One that might have been asked many times in the past with even less reason. But suddenly when he said that, I felt a chill. Don't say that, I ordered. There was a silence as he realized that of which I spoke. What has happened to our country that the American people have let slip this extraordinary charter for the most important form of governing in the history of civilization slip-slide down into this cesspool of political corruption? That we can have phone conversations with worrying about someone listening in, even if we don't present any sort of threat to our government. I do think we'll get out of this mess, but it'll be a close thing. We have to start learning from our mistakes. And that's Seat Notes for August the 30th. Thanks to Sam Farr for dropping in. Tell us what's going on from his viewpoint in the Congress. And to Mike Robbins, whose book is Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. We will be back tomorrow with Lucy Dalglish, the Reporters Committee for Freedom of Press, and Carolyn Kay, our media observer and political editor. Join us every day at noon Pacific. And thank you for joining us today. I'm your correspondent, Tony Seaton.
I'm so hungry.
Shoes, George.
If you love me, no more stores.
Your sister's wedding, pink shoes.
One good sandwich.
La Casa Bodega, great sandwiches. We'll watch the ocean. Turn left.
I'm so hungry.
Turn left.
Wait, La Casa Bodega. See, I can find anything.
You're amazing. You order, I'll get wine for dinner. You never miss it.
Wine for dinner?
George, your tie's on fire.
Red or white?
The car just blew up.
Okay, red, just because I love you.
La Casa Bodega on Del Monte, across from Wharf 2, 831-655-3222. Best food and wine in town.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of The Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At The Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
You're listening to KRML, 1410 AM, Carmel, California. The news from the Quality News Network is next.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. A reprieve at last in one of the most tenuous death penalty cases ever to wind its way through the Texas criminal justice system. I'm talking about the case of Kenneth Foster, who was scheduled to be executed on August 30th. Foster never killed anybody, but he was about to be killed himself by the state of Texas. You see, Foster was the getaway man in a robbery, and during the holdup, one of the robbers shot a guy to death. Under Texas law, you can be put to death yourself for being a co-conspirator in a murder. And that's what the prosecutor down in Texas had in store for Foster, even though he never touched the victim and never was down for the murder in the first place. Foster's already served 10 years in prison. Seems about right to me, but he was hours away from losing his life. Fortunately, the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles voted to recommend that his sentence be commuted. And amazingly, Rick Perry, the Republican governor of Texas, agreed. He commuted Foster's sentence to life in prison. At least in this one case, a little sanity has finally surfaced down in Texas. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
This is the Quality News Network. Republican Senator John Warner says it's time to pull at least 3% of the U.S. troops out of Iraq by Christmas. However, Army Major General Rick Lynch, commander in Iraq, says the enemy would quickly retake the terrain that coalition troops have fought hard for. In Iraq today, one U.S. soldier was killed and four wounded in combat. Last night, al-Qaeda in Iraq militants attacked a police station. In the subsequent two-hour battle, three people were killed and 14 arrested. In Afghanistan, three British soldiers were killed when a U.S. airstrike was called in by their patrol, which was under attack by the Taliban. U.S. and British officials expressed their deepest regrets to the dead soldiers' families and loved ones. Sudan is accepting weapons in defiance of a U.N. arms embargo. Two Western diplomats have been ejected, and they're revising the death count in the four-year-long conflict in Darfur from 200,000 to just 9,000. All this is ahead of the 26,000-strong UN peacekeeping force due to arrive soon. When he finishes his 17-year sentence in Miami in September, former Panamanian leader Manuel Noriega won't be a free man. France wants him to come over and serve time for a 1999 money laundering conviction obtained in absentia, and his mother country wants him back to do time for murdering a political opponent. He prefers Panama. A judge will decide his fate Tuesday. Ku Klux Klansman 72-year-old James Ford Seal was sentenced today to three life terms in prison for his part in the 1964 Mississippi murder of two black teenage boys. Another Klansman that was granted immunity admitted to participating in the crime and turned against Seal. A dozen more similar cases are being reopened by the FBI. Michael Vick has been suspended without pay from the NFL as of today. His admission of guilt earlier today of his role in his dogfighting operation was all the NFL needed to drop him from the league. His actions were found to be in direct violation of his player contract. The suspension now gives the Falcons the ability to go after Vick's $20 million signing bonus. He also faces 5 years in prison and $250,000 in fines. It's a deluge in the upper Midwest as record rains flood entire towns and neighborhoods, and Chicago really lives up to its name as the Windy City. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
A study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition finds that fear of new foods may be inherited. The research involved twins who were questioned on their willingness to give new foods a try. In the past year, sales of the so-called morning after pill have nearly doubled. That's after the federal government decision to allow anyone over the age of 18 to purchase the emergency contraceptive without a doctor's order, as long as they have proof of age at the drugstore. The Commerce Department reports the big-ticket factory orders were up nearly 6%. In July, workers have discovered the remains of a mammoth while digging a canal in Florida. One still intact tooth alone weighed close to 9 pounds. The findings are thought to be over 10,000 years old. The FDA is proposing stricter requirements for sunscreen lotions to protect against UVA rays, which are associated with serious long-term skin damage. The Big Mac turned 40 today in celebration of Big Mac Museum has just opened. New applications for unemployment benefits decreased by 2,000 claims last week. It was a great day on Wall Street as the market closed on a high note fueled by news of stronger than expected new home sales and more durable goods manufactured in U.S. factories. The Dow closed up 143 points, NASDAQ up 32, S&P up 17, oil up $1.26 a barrel at $71.09. More at quality.